Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, September 4th, oh my goodness, 2024, on 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So Ron wants to run out and clean himself, so let's ask what's going on with him.
That's pleasant.
Before he does that.
Yeah, that was pleasant.
Yeah, you've been wearing a shirt that I've been telling you to throw in the wash for a couple days. A really nice shirt, but it has food on it.
Right. Right. And I'll do that. And that's nice that you let your listeners know that. That's very nice.
So you're not going to get to see this shirt. You probably saw it on another show, but we're not going to show it on this show.
We're not going to show it today.
All right. So how are you feeling?
Okay. Still weak. Very weak. But I'm
getting
there.
This has been months. It's August. It's five months since you stopped that drug.
Yeah. And right now I'm on a complete rebuild project of, you know, just getting my muscles back. And it's weird because it's not just my legs. It's everything.
Yeah, it's your hands and your arms.
I rode on Saturday.
Yeah.
Not fast, but we climbed a lot of hills.
Right.
And when I got done, my triceps were like tender to the touch, sore, because they just aren't strong anymore. I'm doing increased weights when I'm teaching my senior classes, so I'm using heavier dumbbells each time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have gotten a little better with that, but it's going to be a long time. It's going to take a while.
It's amazing how much muscle mass you must have lost.
I must have lost an awful lot.
Or I don't know if it's damage or loss.
I think it's loss.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, I mean, I can, obviously you can see the muscles. They're there,
yeah.
But they're just very, very weak.
Yeah.
So this is just a complete, you know, it's a project right now. Someone should study
because
this.
Because it would be great to know the actual mechanism. My thought is that the mechanism is, very simply, that, you know, when you reduce cholesterol too low and then you use your muscles, the way you get more muscle mass is that you make more muscle cells. And if
Right.
you don't have if you don't have cholesterol, you can't make cell membranes, so
Right.
you can't make more cells.
Right.
So I'm just wondering if you had hypoplasia of your muscles and it was to such an extent that you're having to rebuild months and months of hypoplasia that you were getting
Right.
by
Right.
For a long time until you drop below a certain threshold, and then your nerve signals were sending they were sending signals to muscles that either weren't there or weren't working.
Well, it's certainly
so I don't know
something
which it is.
To study. Yeah, there's definitely.
That's my hypothesis, but
Right.
I don't know if that's the right hypothesis.
Right. And then, you know, I talked to you about the Bill, the guy who takes my spin class, who's, you know, partner in crime at the university, did a test on how long it takes for your muscles to atrophy when you don't use them.
Yes.
And, of course, they, you know, they basically strap people down in order to find out. But
yeah.
9 hours. Is when it begins.
9 hours you start to atrophy without moving.
That's when it begins.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you go through a period of time where you're not rebuilding muscles and your muscles are still atrophying because of it,
yeah,
there's got to be some sort of a combination there too that probably comes to
so
effect.
That means you basically have to be working your muscles every single day because
Right.
you should be spending 9 hours sleeping.
Right.
7 to 9 hours sleeping, depending on the person.
But, you know, as we know, the healthy way to live is to continue to move.
Yes.
And as long
of course.
As you continue to move, then you stay healthy.
Yeah.
You know, for what, and whether it be going for walks or just doing function around your house or whatever it
Right.
is, you know, it's just, you got to move. You got to be doing things all the time.
Yes. Yeah,
because
pretty much
sedentary
every day.
turns into atrophy.
Right. And you were certainly not sedentary. I mean, you're finding that when you do move, then, it, as I said, you're getting nerve signals to muscle cells that aren't there.
Right.
And so you're having to rebuild.
The positive side of this is that I'm no longer feeling like my muscles are fatigued. On a bike ride, I'll feel it towards the end of a bike ride. I'll feel fatigue, but which is way different than sore muscles. You know,
right.
Fatigue and sore muscles are two different things. So, but now my muscles feel really sore when I get done from a ride.
Yeah.
And I really feel my hamstrings. I really feel my glutes. I really feel my quads.
Yeah.
And they're sore, like, to the touch. You can actually feel, you know, that, which is weird because I don't normally experience that.
You should take Epsom salt baths. You don't want to get in the bath, do you?
No, I want to rebuild my muscles.
Well,
that's
of course.
What I want to
but
do.
You could put Epsom salt lotion on your skin and it might make you feel better.
Right. It's not to a point of discomfort.
Yeah.
So I would do that if I was in discomfort, but I'm just, you know, it's just, I just notice it more. That's all. I just notice it. My biceps, my triceps, everything. It's all, you know, all through my shoulders. My shoulder has been horrible. My bad shoulder has just been awful.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
that's why you have that weight under the desk there.
Well, yeah. And I'm working on trying to get my hand strength back. And, you know, I've just, everything is gone. Opening a jar is a huge endeavor right now.
Wow.
It's just really weird.
Yeah, even with my reduced activity, and my reduced activity is either because of injury or my nervous system, I'm not having that muscle decline. Like, I'll get normally sore after a ride, but I recover from it.
Right.
My muscles aren't, I'm sure that they're not what they were when I was able to ride 4 days a week, but I haven't been able to ride consistently all summer, which is so sad. But I'm still able to ride it. And I think that, and the muscle stuff I can manage. It's just that, you know, I have this knee injury and then of course the nervous system. The nervous system is so delicate right now. It's still pretty delicate. And again, I don't know how much of that is chronic Lyme and Bartonella and how much of it is just my vagus nerve is just damaged. It's actually damaged from Lyme and Bartonella, and I don't have so much of the microorganisms on board. And how much of it is, are there still spike proteins present?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, you would think that my last encounter with spike proteins would have been, when did we have COVID? February of 23, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was it 23 or 22? I think it was 23.
When did we have COVID?
Yeah, we had COVID. It was February, a year ago February.
Remember.
Wasn't this year.
Yeah.
So we've managed not to get COVID since February.
Right.
The one time we had actual COVID was, pretty sure it was February of 23. I'd have to look at my records, but I think that's right. And having COVID was a walk in the park compared to the vaccine injury. It's incredible.
Right.
Yep.
Well, I'm looking forward, a month from now, I'll be getting another lipid panel done.
Right.
Because I have a cardiologist appointment early October.
Yeah, that will be very interesting to see.
It will be really interesting to see what the numbers are.
Because you're pounding ground flax seeds.
Ground flax seeds, avocados, salmon, oats.
Yes.
I mean, I'm doing all the quote-unquote right things.
Yeah. And you can also do, so the item in oats that helps to lower your cholesterol is beta-glucan. It's an immune compound. And that's high in oats. It's also high in mushrooms. So we could be eating more mushrooms.
Right.
They just have to be cooked.
Right.
So mushrooms, so that wonderful soup that we have sitting in the fridge.
Right.
That has a lot of mushrooms in it.
Right.
Yeah. So cooked mushrooms are mushrooms and soup is probably one of the best ways to go, because when you put mushrooms in a hot water extract, it activates the beta-glucans, and the beta-glucans are great for your immune system. And that's the big thing that's in mushrooms that's really good for you, beta-glucans.
Right.
And beta-glucans help to sweep out cholesterol.
Yep.
So that's what the component of oats that's doing it for you. It's also the soluble fiber.
Mm.
And the ground flax seeds have plenty of fiber too.
Right. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
It's a grand experiment. But, you know, when I spoke to my cardiologist, who was not super happy with me not doing the drugs, I said, we're going to try it my way for a little while and see what happens.
Yeah.
Because I'm not doing any damage that I know of by going right. this way.
No.
But if I can get my, if I can keep my cholesterol down and get my triglycerides to go down even lower, then I'm really
what
kind
were
of
your last triglycerides?
They were pretty low. They're 60 something?
Yeah, but 60, you don't have to go lower. I mean, you can go lower than that, but it's not necessary.
Yeah.
60 is fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah,
60, it's like 63, is, I that's think
that's excellent.
Is what it was.
I mean, yeah. I like to see my patients' triglycerides in the double digits. The lower the double digits, the better. But, you know, I don't know if you have much more health benefit having a triglyceride of 60 versus a triglyceride of 35. You might.
Oh, okay.
But,
right.
But you, I think you definitely, even though the reference range for adults is 150, the reference range for kids is lower than that. It's something like 100 or 110 or something.
Mm.
But the reference range for adults is 150. And I prefer to see my adults in the double digits. You know, if
right.
they're at 112,
right.
I want them to eat less starch and sugar and get more exercise.
Right.
Than whatever they're doing and eat more fiber and stuff.
Well, the other thing is I want to see my HDL go up.
Yes.
That's what I'm really looking
for. So what
for.
Was your last HDL?
87.
Why you
like that?
Again, I don't know if that's excellent, and I don't know if there's going to be much health difference between an HDL of 87 versus an HDL of 100. At
but
87,
if I have
that's
more,
excellent.
If I have more HDL, then I'm going to get better cellular build, correct? Because don't you need the cholesterol for cell build?
No, HDL pulls cholesterol out of circulation and takes it back to your liver
right.
for use.
Okay.
You're going to have less cholesterol in circulation if you have higher HDL, which is going to make your cardiologist happy.
Oh, right.
So the thing is, the problem that you have is that you dropped your LDL too low.
Right.
You need LDL, what LDL, low-density lipoprotein, its job is to pull cholesterol out of your liver at carry cholesterol through your circulation and carry it to the body where it's needed.
Right.
So if your LDL is too low, you're not going to have enough LDL to rebuild cells. And which cells have cholesterol in them, pray tell?
All of them.
You got it. That's right.
Right.
And you need cholesterol to build nerve cells. You need it to build muscle cells, both of which you're experiencing problems
right.
with. And you may have deficits in your nervous system as well as your muscle, as your, we know you have deficits in your muscles, but you may also have deficits in your nervous system because your nervous system is full of fat. All of your nerve cells are lined with cell membranes that are full of fat and cholesterol. So if your cholesterol goes too low, what's one of the things they say with too low cholesterol? You can get cognitive deficits. You can get you have a higher risk of Alzheimer's. You have a higher risk of blood sugar dysregulation, so type 2 diabetes. So people they have increased risk of diabetes from taking statins. You read that, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's because you're not able to rebuild your cells as well, and you don't have as good quality cell membranes, and so you have reduced insulin sensitivity.
Right.
So you need a certain amount of LDL to build cells, and I'm just not sure that all of this lowering of cholesterol is really the way to go. Really the way to go is to pull out, is to focus on antioxidants, but rebuilding the health of your vascular system. I know you have little spider veins in your ankles.
Okay.
You do. So, and we know you have some level of vascular insufficiency because you get Raynaud's.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get migraines, but you get Raynaud's in your hands and your feet.
Right.
And so you may have an issue with the integrity of your blood vessels, and so they're susceptible to oxidative damage, and that's why you got your atherosclerosis. Not because you have a cholesterol problem, but because you have an oxidation problem, which is why we're trying to get you that product that I have you on with all the antioxidants and the minerals in it.
Mm.
So when you have and we remember years ago, we did a test on you and you had elevated lead and mercury in your system.
Right.
So heavy metals cause oxidative stress. So I don't know if you're still taking the modified citrus pectin. You should be.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, so modified citrus pectin is something you should really be taking for the duration because
right.
that's
actually,
going
I gotta
to
get
help
some
you.
More of that.
Yeah, that's going to help you pull minerals, toxic minerals out of your system. It's a way to gently heavy metal chelate. That I think increasing antioxidants, increasing healthy minerals, and reducing toxic minerals, and reducing oxidative stress, I think that's really the way to go to protect people from cardiovascular disease. Not so right. much lowering cholesterol, because we see when you lower cholesterol, people have all kinds of problems, and the older right. people are, the worse it is.
In the long-term statin feedback is liver and kidney damage.
Then there's that. Right. Absolutely.
So
a lot of drugs.
Why would you want to do that?
No, it makes no sense.
No.
No, because
makes no sense.
You need your liver to process all those vitamins and minerals that you need for your health.
Right. And this is for a 1% chance that I can, I'll keep myself from having another incident.
Right, exactly. So it doesn't make sense to lower
1%.
The cholesterol.
I'll roll the dice. For 1%,
exactly.
I'll roll the dice.
And you're not really rolling the dice, because it's not like you're doing nothing. You're doing
right.
a lot. You're
I
eating
do a
fiber,
lot.
You're
I'm
eating
very
avocado,
healthy.
You're eating salmon, you're getting exercise, and you're reducing your oxidative stress by eating all the greens that we eat. And quite frankly, because you have this tooth problem and you have to blend your vegetables,
yeah.
That's actually a better way to get your veggies in, because you're breaking up the cell membrane. So you're getting inside the cell, not the cell membrane, cell walls. You're getting inside the vegetables. So you're actually getting more benefit from your vegetables that way than I am when I just eat the salad, because I'm relying on my teeth to chew it, and I may not chew it enough to get inside it.
Right.
So when you puree vegetables,
yeah,
you actually get inside them better.
Thing.
Yes.
Well, that's why so many people are into those veggie things. You know,
yes.
Yeah. And parents, you can't get your kids to eat a salad, put it in a blender.
Right. If
and make
if
it into a smoothie. And
you
guess
can.
What? It really, you know, you can make it taste any way you want. Do it. Put a little honey in, sweeten it up a little bit.
Put fruit
but
in it.
Put
sure.
fruit in it, and your kids will eat salad without even realizing they're eating salad.
Well, they might. That is something to try. And
it's
we
certainly
have all kinds
something
of things.
To try.
We have all kinds of things that we have parents try for picky eaters, but some kids will see green, and they're like, nope, it's green. Don't give it to me. They're that bad. I mean, but
yeah.
it is a good idea, and, you know, The Sneaky Chef. The Sneaky Chef was written by Missy Lapine, and Deceptively Delicious was written by Jessica Seinfeld, wife of you know who.
Mm.
And both of them, they teach you recipes to sneak vegetables into other foods, like to
right.
sneak it into meatloaf, or sneak it into ground beef, or sneak it into a sauce. So ways that you can eat vegetables so that you're not experiencing the actual eating of the vegetables, make it taste a way so that you'll still eat them.
It's
and
like
then
sneaking flaxseed meal into things. You don't even realize it's there.
Yeah. And I deal with parents of children who are picky eaters, and depending on how picky the child is, sometimes children are picky when they're young and they grow out of it.
Right.
And sometimes
we went through that with Greg.
Yeah. And then sometimes children are truly picky eaters, and they grow up to be picky eaters, and it's a sensory issue. It's a sensory challenge issue. Mm-hmm. And they just don't like the taste or texture of certain foods.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they will only eat three foods, like they'll eat. And you know, I'll tell a parent, your child is gluten intolerant, and they're like, no, my kid will only eat bread, and it has to be this brand of bread. I can't eat. It has to be white bread, and it has to be this brand. If I use a different brand of the same kind of bread, they won't eat it. And they'll eat hot dogs, and they'll eat mac and cheese, and that's all they'll eat.
Ick.
Right. So you have kids like that, and sometimes you have to, I often will recommend that they get books on picky eaters, and
right.
so that they learn strategies on helping with picky eating. And sometimes I will, that they have to be sent to have feeding, we'll send them to a university for feeding, or, you know, a university hospital for, feeding assistance to teach the kids how to refeed. It's
wow.
just something that happens. And I don't know if it's, how much of it is like a sensory thing and how much of it is, the parents, when the child
giving
was young,
in.
They, you know, they do that thing where they give them their first fruit as rice cereal, and you
yeah.
should never do that.
Yeah.
Because I have parents of children who are like, oh, yeah, she eats anything. She eats whatever we eat. We never even gave her baby food. And if you don't offer the kids junky, sugary stuff to start, sometimes they won't get a taste for it early. Right. And they'll understand that it's a special treat. And you know, when you were growing up, you got what was on the table. And if you didn't eat it, you didn't eat.
You didn't eat. Right. Right. Exactly.
And parents were stricter back then.
My oldest sister, Jean, she raised her boys when they wanted a treat. She gave them an apple or an orange or a peach.
Yeah.
And it was sweet.
Yeah.
So it was like a treat. So, yeah. And they didn't have any soda in the house.
Right.
You know, you just don't have that material there. I don't think Greg found soda until he went over to a friend's house.
Right. So you didn't keep soda in the house either.
Yeah. No, we didn't have any soda in the house.
And there's no way Kathy would have soda in the house.
No.
No.
No. Right. And I don't care. I don't need soda.
Yeah.
I mean, I could care less. I don't even like seltzer that much. I mean, we had seltzer. But...
I know. We keep it in the house. And I have in my head that I like it. And I do enjoy it when I have it. But most of the time, you see what I drink.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I generally don't.
Tonight, I think I'll have some seltzer, and then I just grab more water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I tend to mostly drink water. And we drink caffeinated beverages.
Right. Tea, I drink coffee.
I drink medicinal teas. I drink my Tulsi tea and my Chinese herbal tea.
Yeah.
And I drink, but I also drink little sips of, because I can't drink a whole cup of full-strength coffee. I have to really moderate my caffeine consumption because I'm a lightweight.
So. Yep, you are.
Here, so let me give you, stay for one more thing and then you can go and wash off.
Yep.
So get this. We had a question from a listener from India.
India?
Yeah!
My God.
I had
it's the
a
other
question.
Side of the world.
I know. I had a question from somebody from Israel once, too. That was exciting. So I had somebody, he emailed me from India.
Yeah.
So the fellow's name is Shreyas. He says, "Hi, my name is Shreyas, and I'm from India. I just listened to your radio show talk, regarding Shilajit, lithium, and one other herb, and I forgot the name of the other one, so I don't remember, but I'm not sure what he was talking about. So now I have a question in my mind, and it will be great if you can help me with this. So my question is, can I take lithium orotate along with Shilajit, or rather followed by Shilajit? And if I do so, then can these two interact with each other and cause any side effects? Please help me with this issue. Thank you. Warm regards, Shreyas."
Nice.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
So here's my answer. So there are trace amounts. So let's remind people what Shilajit is. Shilajit is a mineral pitch. And so what I'm going to do, if you're lucky enough to be watching Facebook Live or Instagram Live, I'm holding a container of Shilajit, and I've never tasted it, so I'm going to do that now. So I don't want to show you the brand because, you know, community radio, but I'm going to open my container of Shilajit, and I'm going to show it to you. So when you take Shilajit, you take very tiny amounts. So I've never actually tasted it. Shilajit is a mineral pitch, and it's the name, I believe, is it's either Hindi or Sanskrit, I'm not sure. And Ron is going to open this for me. So, yes. So it has a lot of minerals in it because it's mineral pitch. That's what it is. And it has a lot of humic and fulvic acid in it. And humic and fulvic acid are from the earth. And those have a lot of minerals in them. So it's detoxifying and it's energizing. So it kind of smells earthy, and like molasses.
I was going to say it's a little molasses-y.
Yes. Yeah. So if you look at it, and oh my goodness, it's the texture of molasses.
It's thick as molasses, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's as thick as, or even maybe even a little thicker. So if you look at it, so this is when they sell you Shilajit, often it'll come with a little stick like this because that's how you have to dig it out
and
of
the
container.
And what is the basis of this? What is it made
It's from, like I said, it's from the, it's a mineral pitch from that you get from the earth. And it has humic and fulvic acid in it, which are they're just really high in minerals, and so they have all kinds of trace minerals in them. So I'm going to taste it.
Hmm.
Okay.
Oh boy,
it's kind of
that was
so
a nice reaction.
The taste is it does not taste like molasses. It's kind of bitter.
Hmm.
So it's definitely kind of bitter. I can deal with it. A lot of people would not be able to deal with it, and some people will choose to take it with in a pill.
Mm.
But this is a really good way to go because you can you can really titrate the dose. And you're supposed to only take a little tiny bit. And I took maybe a quarter of a teaspoonful. So we'll see how this makes you feel. It's supposed to help you with energy. So Shreyas is asking if he can take lithium orotate along with it. The thing is, there is lithium in this. There's many trace minerals, manganese and calcium, magnesium, and there's definitely, you know, silicon. There is lithium in the, that's one of the trace minerals that's in Shilajit. So can he take lithium orotate along with it? So I wrote some stuff down. There are trace amounts of lithium in Shilajit, but it's unlikely that if you're taking a pea-sized amount of the tar, that you're even getting as much as a milligram of lithium. It is possible that in taking Shilajit, you won't need as much lithium orotate, because not only will you be getting a trace amount of lithium, you'll be getting an array of trace minerals that will help with many systems in your body, including methylation, which will help with your mood. If you feel that you're benefiting from lithium orotate, it might be a good idea to start with a very low dose, such as 0.5 to 1 milligram, and see if you have an improved mood. Personally, only 1 milligram of lithium orotate reduces my tremors, helps my mood, and helps me to sleep better. So especially if you're taking Shilajit, a little goes a long way. As always, if you have a holistic health practitioner locally, it's a great idea to consult with them. And given that you're in India, you're likely to have Ayurvedic as well as homeopathic practitioners nearby. Shreya, thanks so much for listening. It's so exciting that you're listening to me in India. I also once had someone write me from Israel, which is so cool. The magic of the internet. It's 2024.
It is the magic of the internet. Right.
So how cool is that?
It is cool.
Yeah. All right. So you can go do your thing, yep. And I'm going to talk more about fat loss.
I'm going to expand that screen for you.
Yes. All right. So this is what I tell people about weight loss and fat loss. So weight loss is not a thing you do. It's something that may happen as a result of what you do. One of my jokes, is one of the things I say to my patients, kind of to be funny, is if you've seen the movie Fight Club, if you've seen the movie Fight Club, you'll get this joke. If you haven't seen the movie Fight Club, you might not. But anyway, in this club, Fight Club was a movie. Came out in the early 2000s, I forget what year, and it starred Edward Norton and Brad Pitt. And so Edward Norton was playing this, you know, ordinary schlub who's kind of a nebbish, and he worked in a company, kind of like the guy in The Matrix. And he wanted to feel more of himself, so he wanted to do something. So he set up this thing called Fight Club, and it was a really weird thing where he'd get men who were feeling the same way, and they'd get together in a warehouse, and they would fight each other. They'd fight each other hard, and they'd hit each other to the point where they would bleed, and it was kind of intense. So the first rule of Fight Club was don't talk about Fight Club. That was the first rule of Fight Club. You don't talk about Fight Club. So we want Fight Club to be private. And so that was very interesting. So what I'd say to people about weight loss is, what's the first rule of weight loss? The first rule of weight loss is you don't talk about weight loss. Same thing as Fight Club. And so why would I say something crazy about that? Because people want to lose weight. I think that obsessing about weight loss is difficult, and it's hard on people, and it makes it harder for you to lose weight. So the thing is that weight loss is not something you do. It's something that may happen, as a result of what you do. So if you focus on the numbers and the scale, you'll make yourself crazy. I don't know if you watched The Biggest Loser back in the day? You would see everybody doing everything right, and you would have men losing 10 pounds or more in a week, and women losing far less, and sometimes maintaining or gaining weight back, even though they had done everything they needed to lose weight. Body just doesn't participate, doesn't cooperate sometimes, especially if you stress it by dropping calories too much. And so there's all kinds of factors that go into whether or not you're going to lose weight. And we're going to talk about what those factors are. It may not be useful to focus on weight loss, but focus on the healthy habits that may get you there. Don't be as concerned about the numbers on the scale. Focus on your healthy lifestyle. As my friend and colleague Jay Tita says, and I quote him all the time on this, weight loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. You may do everything right this week and not lose an ounce on the scale. But if you did everything right this week, I assure you, you are getting healthier. I had a gentleman come in to see me who hadn't lost a lot of weight. I had seen him, you know, maybe 4 months earlier. And the gentleman dropped his carbs a great deal and was eating more. This worked for him. So he was eating more animal protein and a lot less carbohydrates. He had an A1C that was in the early diabetic range, in the high sixes. And when he came to see me 4 or 5 months later, his A1C had gone down 10 points. It was incredible. He hadn't lost that much weight, but he changed his diet so much that his hemoglobin A1C went down. Hemoglobin A1C is a measure of the level of damage to cells as a result of eating too much sugar. So just by reducing his carbohydrates, getting regular physical activity, he dropped his, and he was going to the gym more, he dropped his A1C into the pre-diabetic, below 6. It was incredible. I was so proud of him. And so that is more important than whatever the numbers are on the scale. So that's what I want to encourage you to do, that you focus on the healthy habits that help you with fat loss. Don't worry so much about the numbers on the scale. You may not even want to weigh yourself because you can focus on how you feel. The most important thing is how you feel to a certain extent, what your lab numbers say, what are your triglycerides and your cholesterol and your blood sugar and your hemoglobin A1C, what do they say, what are your nutritional values, how's your vitamin B12 and your iron and your vitamin D, are you anemic, do you have, is your metabolic panel healthy, so are your numbers good, is your thyroid functioning the way that it's supposed to? So all of those things are really helpful. And so focusing on weight on the scale may not be as good of an idea. So this is an article from Prevention that I'll quote from 2021 about their view of rethinking fatness and automatically associating a large body with poor health is not only misguided, it can be dangerous. So whatever diet you do, whether it's South Beach, paleo, keto, low fat, low carb, intermittent fasting, there's many kinds of diets that you can do. Unfortunately, our culture idealizes thinness and shuns larger bodies. So nearly 1 in 5 midlife women have dieted in the past few years, and many regain the weight and see themselves as having failed. Less than 1% of very large people got to a normal weight at all in a study that included 100,000 women, and most who did regain the pounds they lost within 5 years. There are medical experts who now say that many of us have been desperate to hear it's extremely tough to drop weight long term for reasons that have nothing to do with willpower and may not even be necessary. The main message people get from the government, health organizations, and the media is that weight and health are connected, but really there's actually not strong evidence to suggest that higher weight automatically leads to poor health. This is interesting. A PhD whose name is Jeffrey Hunger said this, of all things. So he's an assistant professor of psychology at Miami University in Ohio, and even Prevention says, yes, that's his real name. If you're a very large body, dropping some pounds can protect your joints from arthritis and make it more comfortable to exercise. But for most women over their ideal weight, focusing on health measures may be much more important than what the scale says. And that's what I tell my patients all the time. So why isn't that a message you're going to hear from your healthcare provider? That the evidence for this has been piling up for years, but practitioners are just really stuck in their beliefs and don't accept anything to the contrary. And there's all kinds of people and companies with financial interest in pumping out anti-fat message, from diet purveyors to drug companies to book authors to even supplement sellers. And I have a handout that I give people, and at the very bottom of the handout is supplements. I really, if you're interested in fat loss, I talk to you about changing your lifestyle and making yourself healthy that way. So here's some important factors that people are overlooking, and this may make you feel better about your fat loss journey. So weight is not an accurate measure of health. So doctors are concerned that women who are heavy are cardiometabolically unhealthy, which encompasses blood pressure, cholesterol level, triglycerides, blood glucose, and measures of heart and arterial fitness. But there are researchers at UCLA and University of Minnesota that looked at a couple dozen studies and concluded there was no clear relationship between weight loss and health outcomes. In other words, shedding pounds didn't necessarily lower blood pressure, diabetes risk, or cholesterol. You can have heavy people, and I see this in my practice as well, heavy people with low blood pressure and not so heavy people with high blood pressure. It doesn't always correlate. So if you equate being heavy with having poor cardiometabolic health and being thin with the opposite, it's off the mark. They looked at a lot of data from 40,000 participants in the government's annual National Health Nutrition Examination Survey and found that nearly half the people classified as overweight and more than a quarter labeled obese had perfectly healthy blood levels of lipids and glucose, meaning that they were cardiometabolically fine. Meanwhile, a full 30% of normal weight participants had unhealthy levels of these markers. So the bottom line is that weight alone is not indicative of health. Nobody can tell whether a person is healthy or not based on their weight. And again, this is something I say ad infinitum. Healthy behaviors are more important than the number on the scale. There was a paper published in Social Issues and Policy Review. Hunger and Colleagues reviewed many studies on weight and health and discovered that healthful behaviors not fitting into our skinny genes are what make you healthy and help you live longer. Heavy people who do healthy things are as likely to thrive as anything else. That means being physically active, eating nutritious foods, quitting smoking, socializing to avoid isolation, reducing stress, and managing depression and anxiety. Your attention shouldn't be on a target weight, but on how many days you intend to exercise this week and how much produce you'll be eating. Again, this is what I say every day, all the time. And this is backed up by studies. So Mary Himmelstein, who's an assistant professor of psychology at Kent State University in Ohio, said this. Go get some yoga, find a therapist if you need one. You can be fat and also fit. To wit, that now I can't remember her last name, that woman Ilona who was the rugby champion in the Olympics. She is, her BMI is over, it's like 30. It's over, it's in the class 1 obesity range, but she's all muscle. So she has very low body fat. So this is a time when BMI, your body mass index, isn't useful because body mass index is a function of weight versus height. It doesn't tell you anything about your body composition. So you can be the same BMI as somebody and have a lot more muscle mass than them or have a lot of body fat. And so weight loss by itself should not be a goal. Our culture regularly equates carrying extra body fat with being out of shape, but plenty of large-bodied women can easily run laps around thinner counterparts at the gym because fitness and weight have little to do with each other. A team of international researchers proved it when they followed over 43,000 mostly white participants against the weight spectrum. They measured blood pressure, cholesterol, glucose, and then tested the participants' fitness levels using a treadmill. Those who were metabolically sound and also fit had the same mortality rates during the next decade, regardless of their weight. Those who were considered obese and unfit, however, were more likely to die. So shedding pounds doesn't always lead to health gains. If low weight equaled good health, dropping pounds would automatically make people healthier, but that's not what happens. Hunger, the PhD, points to a meta-analysis that found that even after dieters lost weight, their blood pressure, blood sugar, and other blood markers weren't significantly better when they were reevaluated two years later. Heavy people may make health gains when they are put on a weight reduction plan, as in the famous diabetes prevention program in 2002, which cut people's risk of developing the disease. But the studies UCLA and University of Minnesota scientists point out participants in it, as in other weight loss trials, were urged to exercise, which the science suggests was likely more of a health driver than the actual loss of pounds. Weight is way more complex than calories in, calories out. Again, this is something that Jade Tita has preached for many years. So many things go into the weight that you are, Himmelstein says. Genes, ethnicity, medicines you take, where you live, your income, how much sleep all play a role, even if most doctors focus only on calories. Weight is so complex that even longtime researchers don't yet understand all the variables involved. People might be heavier because these days food is so easily available, or maybe it's the crazily larger portions restaurants serve with compared with 35 years ago. So Dr. Barbara Corky, who's a PhD of medicine biochemistry at Boston University School of Medicine, and also the director of the Obesity Research Center, is intrigued by the notion that chemicals used in farming, additives in processed foods, and other toxins make their way onto our plates and cause our bodies to erroneously release too much insulin, a hormone that makes us want to eat more. Corky suggests it may not be that obesity brings on problems like insulin resistance, as many doctors believe, but unnaturally high insulin levels lead to obesity and insulin resistance. So eating chemicals will affect your insulin sensitivity. So if you're eating a lot of processed food, any of the chemicals, the preservatives, the colors that are in any foods that you eat, those can be keeping weight on because your body looks at them and tries to metabolize them and can't possibly, it can't metabolize them, and it may wind up storing them as fat. So you create more fat, and that's your body's way of protecting you from those chemicals. This is why there's that book, The Science of Skinny, that you can read. And Science of Skinny talks about basically eating whole foods. It's not necessarily talking about certain foods or what foods you eat, that whatever you eat, make sure it's all natural and doesn't have preservatives and it's real food. Eat a fruit, eat a vegetable, eat, clean protein, eat nuts and seeds, stay away from things in boxes and packages that have added sugars and added sugars, but also just chemicals in them. Remember that saying, you can't be too rich or too thin? Not true. You can be too thin. There may be no upper limit to how rich you'd like to be, which can still be problematic, but there's definitely a floor for how thin you should be. If your body mass is below 20, a body mass index below 23, which is less than 130 pounds for a 5'3" woman, it's linked to greater mortality than being a few pounds heavier. So I'm 5'3.5". I'm not in the 130s now. I'm probably at a weight that's okay for me. I'd like to be a little bit lighter, but I'm at a weight where all I should be doing is focusing on eating as healthfully as I possibly can. So 130, at 130, I don't look super skinny. I look healthy. I look thinner than I look now, but I do not look, I definitely don't look skinny. I look like I have some padding on me. And so for me, being less than 130 pounds is linked to greater mortality than being a few pounds heavier. And they found this when they examined hundreds of studies with over 30 million participants. And it was true even when they excluded people who might have been thin because they were already sick. It's better to have a little weight on. I get nervous when I see my patients losing too much weight. And if I see someone's lost weight and they look kind of skinny, I ask them if they're okay and if they intended to lose weight. Sinking to a too low body mass index can make you feel awful. When Oprah Winfrey, dropped to a low weight for her, when she did that thing where she jiggled the fat that she wheelbarrowed on her show, she was constantly frazzled and exhausted, and that's what she told crowds at her wellness events in 2019. And she felt better when she put some pounds back on and reached the right weight for her. And BMI itself is under fire as a flawed measurement because I said this already. Because among other issues, it does not differentiate between fat and muscle. It will categorize athletes like that rugby woman, Alona. And others with lots of muscle is overweight, and it doesn't consider ethnic differences in body type either. Now, mind you, when we're talking about Oprah, this article was written in 2021 before Ozempic and Wegovy and Rybelsus, the GLP-1 inhibitors, or no, I'm sorry, GLP-1 enhancers have come into use, and Oprah is now taking one, and she's at a low weight, and presumably she's feeling good at this weight. I don't know if she's feeling irritable and frazzled like she said in 2019, but that was 5 years ago, and now she's taking... She hasn't said which GLP-1 agonist she's taking, but she's taking one. And she looks very slender. So many healthcare providers are dangerously biased. Most people with high body weight have a story about how their doctors judged or blamed them or didn't listen. That is not what I do. I try to make my patients feel very safe around their weight. I give them that whole speech about what's the first rule of weight loss. Don't talk about what's the first rule of Fight Club. Don't talk about Fight Club. What's the first rule of weight loss? Don't talk about weight loss. And then talk to them about how it's much more important to focus on healthy habits. And when you have a healthy habit, you can journal that, because the thing is, weight loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. So you can do everything right and not lose weight this week. So if you are focusing on that goal of what the scale says, it'll make you nuts because you may not lose weight this week. So I think it's a fraught goal to focus on. And I don't even, if my patients don't want me to weigh them, I don't. It's not as important to me as what their blood values say, as whether they're exercising, whether they're doing stress reduction, whether they're eating healthy whole foods. That's more important than actually being a certain number on the scale. Most people with high body weight have a story about how their doctors shame them. That has happened to me. It's true with all kinds of providers, even those who specialize in weight management, which can lead to a vicious cycle in which women avoid going to the doctor because they don't want to be fat shamed, then miss out on treatment or early detection. In other cases, health complaints have nothing to do with weight, are inaccurately blamed on a person's size, so patients miss out on the correct treatment. In this way, among others, doctors' bias can make people sicker, which might then add to the perception that everyone who's large-bodied are unhealthy. When a study assessing the 2009 H1N1 flu pandemic confirmed that obese people suffered more complications and death from the disease, the authors pointed out this might have been because those patients weren't given critical antiviral medicines as early in their disease as other. It's unclear whether they didn't seek out treatment as soon or it wasn't offered to them by medical professionals. Problems like diabetes, cancer, autoimmune conditions are especially important to identify early when they're more easily treated, and health professionals putting too much emphasis on body weight seems to be keeping people from getting the best care. So, eating healthfully will get you farther than a weight loss diet. So dieting can help you trim pounds, but keeping them off is another story. The low nutrition levels and excessive exercise of a lot of weight loss plans are not sustainable. Plus, when you cut back on calories, your metabolism slows to a crawl. When women reduce their calories, so you have a couple of hormones. You have leptin and you have ghrelin. Leptin is a hormone that helps you to feel satiety. It helps you to feel satisfied. Ghrelin is a hunger hormone. It will be released when you are hungry. When you release ghrelin, you want to eat. And so women, when they cut their calories to a certain level, they make their leptin levels go down and their ghrelin levels go up. So by starving yourself of calories, you actually increase your levels of ghrelin and lower your leptin. So you feel like you want to eat more. Your body is like, oh, I'm starving. I'm going to take down the leptin. I'm going to put out the ghrelin. That's why people go on those GLP-1 enhancers, because they make you feel satiated. So our body's biological architecture doesn't know what the thin ideal is. It's doing everything it can to protect you from what it perceives as famine. If you undereat, your body thinks you're starving, and it will metabolically decide that you are starving, and it will tweak your metabolism and your hunger hormones and satiety hormones to reflect that. So you can't fool your body. Well, you fool your body by taking these drugs. And last week we talked about how those drugs can really affect your, they have all kinds of side effects, and they do affect your satiety, but they also have side effects like, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. Because of those factors, European analogists of large-bodied women calculated the chance of their reaching a normal BMI as less than 1 in 100. Rather than make a drastic temporary change for a short-term goal like how you look at a class reunion, focus on small, sustained changes like eating more whole grains and plant-based foods. It says less red meat here. I don't think the reason that people are heavy is red meat. I think the reason people are heavy is eating processed foods with chemicals in it and not eating enough healthy whole foods. The gentleman that came in that reduced his A1C down to, by 10 points, was eating a lot of meat and eggs. So it's not, people get, they're like, I'm going to become a vegetarian and that's going to, that's going to make me healthy. And that's not true. Being a vegetarian won't necessarily, I mean, being a vegetarian, if you're eating lots of fruits and vegetables and you get rid of too much sugar and carbohydrates and processed food, will make you healthier. But eating healthful animal protein will still help you lose weight. And if you're eating grass-fed and finished beef in reasonable amounts, it's not going to make you fat. What makes you fat in terms of foods is sugar, too much carbohydrate, and too many chemicals. That's what actually causes you to gain weight. So eating that science of skinny is really kind of where it's at, that you want to eat real fruits and vegetables, clean protein, nuts and seeds, beans. And you eat foods that, you don't eat your food intolerances either, you know, so eat foods that make you feel good and make you feel healthy, and don't have processed chemicals in them. You may have to tweak your macros to a level that works for you, but you shouldn't walk around hungry either. I know that even, that Chris Carmichael has said that if you want to be faster, you have to be at a certain weight. And Chris Carmichael says you might have to spend some time feeling hungry. And he's right. If you're going to lose weight to a certain level, you might have to spend some time feeling hungry. I don't think that's good for you. And my buddy Marissa Axel, who is a coach who coaches the Forgotten Woman, who is our peri and postmenopausal women athletes, say that all the studies were done on men. And it's not good for women to feel like they're hungry. If you're going to get a good workout, you want to eat more, not less. And you want to eat more calories. And calories support your workout. Now, it is better to eat healthy whole foods. But eating foods that work for you is the way that you want to go. And she also has said that intermittent fasting, I try to discourage people from intermittent fasting. Now, if you walk in and you're like, I intermittent fast and I feel fabulous and it works for me, I lost 20 pounds and I'm healthy and happy and I'm eating all whole foods, of course I'm going to tell you keep doing that. But the studies in intermittent fasting, according to Marissa Axel, and perhaps, I don't know if this is something that Stacey Sims and Celine Yeager said as well, is that the studies in intermittent fasting were done on young men. And they were not done on peri and postmenopausal women. If peri and postmenopausal women undereat, we get those symptoms. We raise our ghrelin, and we lower our leptin, and we get hungrier. And if you're trying to perform in some kind of exercise, you're not going to perform as well. So I discourage people from intermittent fasting. Unless, again, if you're doing something that works for you, as long as you're not hurting yourself, I'm going to tell you to do it. If you're intermittent fasting and then I do your labs and you have great blood sugar and A1C and cholesterol and you're happy and healthy, I'm going to tell you keep doing what you're doing. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But for most women, intermittent fasting doesn't work. It doesn't really work for me. I mean, if you have any autonomic anything, which women who are peri and postmenopausal tend to have, because your hypothalamus isn't always happy with not having that estrogen around, so you're gonna have body temperature issues, which is going to play into your autonomic nervous system. And when you have an autonomic nervous system that's a little dicey, you have to eat regularly. You want to keep your blood sugar even. You don't want to have spikes and drops in your blood sugar. And so, for me, keeping my autonomic nervous system happy means eating protein. And I do find that I have to eat some animal protein whether it's eggs or turkey or chicken. I don't do as well with red meat, so I don't eat a lot of it, but I don't eat none. I can have snacks that have pork in them, so no, I know I'm Jewish and I do not keep kosher, but you know, the those snack sticks that you can get that are made of grass-fed, cleanly raised animals, I can eat those. So, and I can eat healthy hot dogs. The hot dogs we tend to get beef, and I can eat those, and those are fine. But I won't sit down and eat a steak because my body just doesn't. When D'Adamo was popular and talking about the blood type diet, I'm a blood type A, and I really fit the blood type A, where I can eat mostly vegetarian, I can eat vegan and be happy, although I do need some animal protein. So my style of eating is closer to what Mark Hyman called, MD, he calls the PEGAN diet. That really works for me, where I eat some animal protein. PEGAN is paleo / vegan. So that really works for me, where I eat some animal protein and a lot of produce, you know, fruits and vegetables. My favorite grain is really a pseudo grain. It's quinoa. I do eat a little bit of rice, but I eat more quinoa. When we have stir fries, or what we call our bowls, we make quinoa for me and rice for Ron, because he's not so, you don't care for quinoa?
Mm-mm.
No, he doesn't like quinoa. I love
quinoa.
It
tastes like dirt.
And I like that about it. I like that it tastes earthy. The thing is, it's lower glycemic. It has more fiber. And it's not a grain. It's a pseudo grain. It's not in the same family as wheat and rye and barley.
It's dirt.
And, you know, and it tastes like dirt. I know. So anyway, so it's really a good idea that rather than making a drastic temporary change to eat more whole grains, plant-based foods, and less processed food, so eating healthy becomes your lifestyle. Even thin people benefit from ditching the focus on weight. A lot of brain power goes into monitoring calories or carbs. Time and energy you should spend elsewhere, and instead of trying to shrink your body, trying to appreciate everything that it does for you. So that's what Prevention Magazine had to say. So I have more to say about fat loss, so and next week we'll talk about Don't Weigh Me cards. So I think it's time to wrap it up, is it? You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.